Human Services Health and Education Committee. And before we start, I just want to say something real quick. First of all, I want to thank our chair, Mrs. Fitzpatrick, for giving me this responsibility. I assured her Monday that I would do the job that she expects of me and that you all expect of me. So I've had a chance the last 2 years on the committee under Carol, who's a tough one to come after, but she did some great things that I hope to carry on. But I also had the privilege to watch some of the other chairs do a great job with their respective committees, such as Mr. Van Etten with Finance, Mr. Horton with Public Safety, and Mr. Hanna with the AIP. So, 2 years watching them succeed and do the good things that they've done, I hope I can do some of them as well. With that said, we do the pledge, right? I'm going to ask Ms. Shannon to lead us in the pledge.
To the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Looking to approve the minutes from our last meeting, December 3rd.
Motion. So moved. Second.
Got a motion, got a second. Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Okay. Lynn? Morning.
We have today the last of our end-of-year reports from some folks on the use of opiate funds on the activities related to that. So first up, we'll have the Steuben Prevention Coalition. Caleb Cutler is here to speak. I did want to introduce you, though, to Lori Malt. She's the new head of the Steuben Prevention Coalition. Caleb took another position as prevention counselor in the schools. So I'll let them come up.
Welcome.
All right. So Lori's just going to be passing out a hard copy here of the report that you guys got. It is black and white because I didn't think the poor printer could handle 250 pages of color printing, or our budgets couldn't. So once she gets that passed out, I'll go ahead and get started.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So it was kind of a weird year again. With me transitioning out of my old position to the prevention services manager role and Lori coming in. So I'm really excited for that next year. Lori is wonderful. She has a lot of experience working in the schools. She'll be taking over all of the old coalition and continuing the work that we've been doing to kind of develop it into a more cohesive organization. That's been really the effort over the last couple of years, is taking the coalition and working it in more with all of our other local agencies and just developing a more dedicated approach. And that's in the report this year. We've had our biggest outcome was the 2.2 million media impressions. Most of that came from our billboard campaign, especially near the end of the year. We really ramped up all of our messaging and tied it in, like obviously with the opioid committee and general prevention beyond that. We had 8 or 9 billboards across the county go up, mostly along the highways and everything. Over in Hornell, we targeted the most afflicted areas for opioid misuse and just really tried to drive home our One Pill Can Kill campaigns, the amount of lethal fentanyl. A lot of it was in collaboration with the sheriff's office. So we've been really just trying to develop that cohesive messaging campaign so that we're not all sounding off different things. It's all the same message coming from all of us, as that will obviously have a better impact when it's constantly reiterated, 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 rather than all these conflicting messages. We also had our second Youth Action Forum, officially making it an annual event, thank God. That went very well. It's continuing to develop. Lori's big project this next year is we're finally developing a dedicated youth coalition in conjunction with our regular coalition so that we can have youth more directly involved in planning activities and messaging campaign development, which again will really strengthen our footing because we do the best that we can with all of our evidence-based campaigns, but we're not the ones on the ground seeing what the situation is. So relegating that and bringing in the kids to kind of give their input will be huge in the next couple of years. This year, we served almost 2,000 unique individuals across all of our events. I'll let Connie talk more about the Narcan trainings and everything, but obviously, that was a huge, huge boon to all of our services and everything. We've really ramped that up as well, especially as Narcan has become easier to get. More and more people have been interested in getting Narcan trained, especially in the schools. But that is all I'll say so I don't step on Connie's report's toes. So I guess that's kind of the broad strokes. If anybody has any questions, anything more specific, feel free to ask.
Mrs. Lando.
So, Caleb, can you just explain, because there's a couple of new legislators here, the DFC, the Drug Free Communities Grant, and what we did and now what we're doing.
So yeah, for the Drug Free Communities Grant, I got to come in at the very tail end of that. That was more youth focused, and it was very specifically dedicated towards alcohol. Near the very end of it, we were able to start addressing marijuana. That opened up in the final years. But obviously, with the new funding, we've been able to really broadly expand off of what the DFC was. It was very limited in its scope. We had to target a very specific group of youth, and we had to stay in very strict boundaries. Now, with this, that's what's opened us up to this cohesive approach that we've been trying to do with partner agencies, to just kind of bring all of Steuben County's messaging and campaigns together so that it's not so conflicting. But yeah, the DFC, we had got that originally in 2013, I believe. So that's what funded us through something 13, 14 or something. So it was 10 years of funding in that very limited scope, but that's what allowed us to originally establish ourselves. Did that kind of answer?
Yes,
Yeah, okay.
thanks.
Any other questions? I've got some comments, but I'm going to wait until after the Connie or
All
whoever's
right.
doing the opiate.
Awesome.
Most of you know her, but now we have Connie Thierry here to talk from the Opioid Committee.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Connie Terry. I'm the program assistant for the Opioid Committee. This is my sixth year doing this job. It's hard to believe that it's been 6 years. Lori is passing out,
Thank you.
the paper version of the report that was sent to you all about a month ago. There's a couple slight changes on there. That report, the original report that was sent to you, stopped December 1st, and we've actually done a lot in the month of December, so I
Thank you.
tweaked it a little bit. I also added an extra page at the very end, which I'll talk about shortly. But obviously, I'm not going to read it to you. But I do want to highlight a few things that are in the report. Every year, we work with the Steuben County Sheriff's Office to promote Drug Take Back Days. This is a national event. They occur in April and October every year, sponsored by the federal government, the DEA office in the federal government, and then local agencies. Obviously, it trickles down to local agencies. So we always support the sheriff's office with advertising mainly, but we also are there to educate people that as they bring in their medications and offer them information and things like drug disposal packets and medication lock boxes and some swag and just to talk to people about what's going on in their homes. So I want to tell you that in 2025, the sheriff's office collected 1,224 pounds of unwanted medications. That's a lot. That's a lot of medication. Once it's collected, it is transported by deputies to the DEA lab in Rochester, and it is incinerated. So that is off the streets. That means nobody can go into those homes and help themselves to that medication. There are a lot of prescription drugs out there that people have in their homes that can be combined with illicit drugs to make people high. And we want to get them out of people's houses if they're not going to use them. People have the habit of using what they need, and then they leave the rest of the medication in their medicine cabinet. And we want to discourage that from happening. And if you are going to keep it, or if people are going to keep it, we want them to at least lock it up in a medication lockbox. So next week I will be meeting with, her name escapes me, but it's, New York State Poison Control Director. And she has noticed some of our information that's gone out on social media from our office, and contacted me before the break. And she would like to collaborate with us on doing some projects for Steuben County. So one that I have in mind is, and I haven't even shared this yet. I was going to share it at this afternoon's meeting, but I would like to do a project this year focusing on senior citizens in Steuben County, working with the Office for the Aging, and helping them, giving them information to help manage medication in their homes. So, you know, we've got a lot of plans for 2026, but back to 2025. Narcan trainings. This year, we trained 664 community members. 664. I have a chart on the second page, it shows you where we have, how we have grown since 2022. The first year we had a Narcan program, we started with 257, and we've grown to 664. That's with Narcan being over the counter. So I'm really proud of that number. So let's talk about what we've done. We have partnered with libraries all over Steuben County to offer community Narcan trainings. And many of the librarians were on board in scheduled trainings. They were small, intimate groups of people who wanted to be Narcan trained, which is fabulous. In fact, I'm doing one in Southeast Steuben Library. We're doing a two-day event, two different trainings next week or the week after. I'm not sure. The day after Martin Luther King Day. So we've got that lined up. We're going to continue to work with our local libraries because they're one of the hubs in every community. At the beginning of the, well, actually during the summer, I worked with Matt at Public Health and Sheriff Allard and Brooks Baker from the DA's office and Pivotal Health to put together a letter to send out to all the superintendents of schools, encouraging them to go above the minimum requirements for Narcan training for public schools. So we need more than school nurses trained, is my point. And we worked very hard on this letter. There was a lot of back and forth, a lot of tweaking, and we finally came up with a really solid letter and infographic published by Steuben Public Health that focused specifically on teen opioid use in Steuben County to make it meaningful. And we sent it out to all the superintendents digitally and then through snail mail. And that kind of helped jumpstart, albeit slow. I started getting phone calls and emails from school districts that wanted us to come in and do Narcan training. So thus far, we have been continuing with Corning Painted Posts. They were kind of our leader in this effort. It started a couple years ago with them. They really pushed to train all of their staff. And we recently trained coaches and retrained administrators. We're going to, at the end of January, I have two more sections of staff to train. So that'll be another 80 to 100 people. For Corning Painted Post. We've done trainings in Wayland Cohocton, Avoca. Right before the Christmas break, I trained 25 teachers from Avoca. Prattsburg, all of their administrators, as well as their nurse are trained. I just got an email Monday. They want to train their teachers, so we're working on that. Hammondsport has all of their administrators and their nurse trained, and we have trained the GST BOCES New Vision students that are in the nursing program. And one of the highlights that happened just a couple of weeks before vacation, or the holidays, I should say, is Lori and I trained the Corning Community College Police Academy cadets. There were 23 of them. And all of them, when they come out of the academy at Corning Community College, all of them will be certified as EMTs because there's such a shortage, as you know, of EMTs. And that was a phenomenal training experience because we were given unlimited time. So I could really do a good job of covering all the areas. And I have to say, I taught high school for 31 years, and I've never once had a student stand up when they asked me a question at attention. I was like, wait a minute. If this was what high school was like, maybe I'd still be teaching. It was incredible. What an incredible group of young people that are going into law enforcement all over this area. It's not just Steuben, it's Chemung, it's the Ithaca area. And that was a phenomenal experience. And it's one that I'm always going to remember. I want you to know that 80% of teen drug fatalities involve fentanyl. 80% of teen drug fatalities involve fentanyl. The reason I'm pushing, Matt Marmer's pushing, DA Brooks Baker, the sheriff, are pushing to get into schools is we cannot lose a kid to fentanyl. I refuse to accept that. I refuse. So I'm going to keep pushing. We're all going to keep pushing. We need to educate our kids that the drug supply, the illicit drug supply, is dangerous. It's not the same as it was 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. Fentanyl is in everything. Everything. We're also working with fire departments. I arranged two fire department trainings yesterday. So we're retraining for that. We've got a lot of agencies trained, and we offer training to all the businesses in the Bath area. I'll be sending a letter out to the Corning area. Corning's pretty good. I mean, they're pretty well trained. We've got to get into Hornell more, but we'll be offering them emergency wall units and training for their staff. I haven't had much of a response from the Bath area businesses, but I'm going to keep trying. As far as OD map software, we ended the year 2025, according to those records, at 259 reported overdoses and 10 fatalities. Of those 10 fatalities, six of them occurred in March 2025. On the very last page of this, you can see I tried to make it as simple as possible. I've created this chart so you can look at previous years and compare this year to previous years. So if you look at March, there's a six under fatal overdoses. Five of those six occurred within a 10-day period of time. That is completely abnormal. It raised a lot of alarms. I became the squeaky wheel. And as a result, we came together, public health, law enforcement, we came together, we discussed it, and we made some changes to the ODMAP system, which are really going to help us a lot moving forward. And I'm not going to talk about that because that's kind of a Matt Marmer's territory. So I'm hoping that 2026 is way better, but yeah, I don't know. We still have a lot of work to do. We have some upcoming projects that we're working on that have not come to fruition yet, but like I said, we're working on them. We have some plans. We don't stop, and we do a lot with a little bit of money. The opioid committee gets about $41,000 a year specifically for opioid committee. After salary and expenses through, because we're managed by Catholic Charities. After that's taken out, we have roughly about $8,000 to $10,000 to spend on our efforts, which is not a lot. But we do a lot with a little. And that comes from my education background. Teachers do a lot with a little. So I may be back here with a plan and an ask, but we haven't got that far because it's only January 7th. So stay tuned. Do you have any questions for me?
Connie, I have one right up here.
Oh, Joe.
How many schools have you trained, all the schools in Steuben County?
No.
Which ones have not been trained?
I hesitate to say that because I don't want to
okay.
put them on the defense.
And that's fine.
But there are a few that I'm concerned about. I can tell you that their nurses are trained, but they haven't necessarily been trained by us. Everything that I read states that in a school, you need to have people trained in certain areas of the school.
Sure.
In the event of an emergency, because the nurse may not be ready or readily available.
Right.
So like Avoca is a giant U-shaped building. So we need people in each corner, and we need office staff, and we need the school nurse. And I can tell you personally, because that's where I taught for so many years, that that school nurse is on a dead run all day long. And she is a runner, thank God, because she collects in the hallway. But she is everywhere in that building. She's not sitting at her desk hardly ever. She has a phone, you know.
Are there Narcan boxes in all the schools?
No, Corning has Narcan boxes.
We're the only one.
It's a slow.
So where are the Narcan? Where can they access them in the schools? In the nurse's
schools
office?
Schools have pouches, have the kits. As far as Corning, there's two in the middle school and two in the high school. I don't know the specific location. So we have a county map managed by public health of where they're located in every community. But we have kept schools and certain entities off of that map because they're private. So we don't want somebody coming off the street and saying, hey, I need Narcan. You know,
yeah.
It's you can't do that in a school. I mean, you have to go through a lot of hoops to get into a school. So there's a lot of, I don't want to strong arm people because that doesn't work. So we're getting there. I need some help in Addison. I need some help in Hornell. I need some help in Arkport.
Very good.
If there's anybody here representing them, you could have a nice conversation with school administrators. That would be really helpful.
And in my opinion, every school
absolutely
should have training.
The state,
every school.
Yes.
You know, having been an educator myself in 35 years, most of the time in the high school level, there's drugs there.
Oh, absolutely.
The high school, there's drugs.
This
They're
is
there.
A drug dealer, right?
And I still keep in touch with some of the administrators in Corning and, you know, everything that's going on. I left in 2012. I retired. And the things that have happened since, in the 14 years there, since, you know, the vaping of, you know, marijuana, and that's tough to nail. I mean, when they smoked in the bathrooms when I was principal, that was easy. You know, you bust in, you see the cloud, and you know, but that's not the case anymore. And, but anyways, I want to make a couple comments. First of all, and I'm going to sing all your praises because I think you all do it. Absolutely phenomenal job with what you do. The two handouts you gave, we actually got them in our email yesterday, so I had a chance to look at them all. Very well done. In-depth, thorough. I mean, it explains everything and all the good things you guys are doing for Steuben County. So my hat off to all of you. One of the things that caught my eye, and I will tell you, the opiate committee, and I've attended a couple of them, Connie, you know, I know Mrs. Lando's very much involved with it, is a very well-run committee, and it's timely. You stay on topic. It's productive. The couple that I've attended, I know you have one this afternoon. I have a doctor's appointment. I'm going to still try to get on. It's always very, very well run, and there's always action taken. That's what I like. And some of the thought processes that you have and you went over, you know, the coasters we passed out to the bars, you know, drug addiction, marijuana, alcohol, all that stuff, you know, it's to get the message out. And I think all of you have done a great job getting the message out. I drive by the billboard every time going home. You know, you see that. But the one thing that really hit home for me, and I got to tell you, when I read that in 2024, 92 Narcan administrations, in 25, 90, that's 182 in the last 2 years, Narcan administrations. So in other words, some of those people, if not all of them, may have died without that administration. Am I right when I say that?
I can tell you that this year I started tracking bystander administrations of Narcan on ODMAP. There have been 16. So that means that in 16 cases, bystanders administered Narcan before police even made it to the scene. You have 4 minutes when people stop breathing, before the brain starts to die. 4 minutes. This is a huge county. Do you know how long it takes law enforcement to get there? And then EMS is following. Law enforcement always has to clear the scene before EMS enters for their safety. If they're lucky, there's a car available right away. But sometimes it can take 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sometimes longer.
Yeah.
So those 16 cases, I'm going to keep tracking them. Those 16 cases are meaningful. It's not a huge number, but it's a start.
Well, let me just one last comment, then I'll open it for you. I just want to say, you know, I just want you to know, and all of you, the coalition as well, as besides the Opiate Committee, you're making a difference. You're making a big difference. And keep doing what you're doing. I think you're such an important force in the county. So anything we can do at our end, please let us know. Mrs. Lando?
So I wanted to echo what the chairman said. We are, first of all, the OD mapping, and I keep making sure people understand, this is only what's reported.
Right.
There are a lot of things going on that we don't know about, things in the school that we don't know about, things all over that we don't know about unless it's reported through 911. But I wanted to sing the praises. Connie's done a great job, and Caleb, and now we have Lori. We could not do this without the passion that Connie has. She's not making big bucks. And she keeps talking about retiring, and we keep saying, oh, no, it's not happening yet.
They're not going to let me.
It's not happening, because I don't know if we could find anybody who has the passion that she has. So we do appreciate all of your efforts, because it would not be happening if it wasn't for you guys.
Mr. Vinan?
A couple of questions. The Fentanyl Awareness Day, you take the information to the schools, and it's up to them to decide whether they... Why isn't that mandated by the state education department?
That's a good question. We can only provide them the information and then hope that the principals encourage their health education teachers to relay that information to students.
I mean, opinion is that the earlier you can get
absolutely
the kids that are impressionable, the better off you are.
Absolutely.
So it amazes me that that's not part of a standard curriculum requirement.
I give them several websites they can go to, and literally all the teacher has to do is click on that and show them a 10-minute video that are very well done and very engaging to young people. And that's all it takes. You know, I make it as simple and as user-friendly and as teacher-friendly as possible. But I have to rely on the administrators.
The six deaths that happened in March last year, was there, I mean, you guys, you said you met and you discussed them. Was there any commonalities about it? Is there any identifiable cause why there were so many in one month?
I do not have access to death certificates. All right. That's Matt Marmer's territory. And it takes months to get that information. I can tell you from everything I've learned in the last 6 years that something bad moved through Steuben County.
That's what I'm wondering.
Something bad.
Was it a strain of stuff?
I think that there was
through the community.
The fentanyl was probably laced with anitazine or carfentanil, which is 100 times stronger than fentanyl. That's Stay tuned. We have some good stuff coming in the next couple of months. And we're digging, we're going to take a deeper dive into that and work together. We have to work together. We have been working together. And I got to say, it's a pleasure. It's an absolute pleasure to work with public health, because I can't do my job without Matt and his team. Malia and the rest of the people that work at public health, they're amazing. And I love that we have torn down the silos. We're working together for the benefit of Steuben.
Mr. Ebelin?
I would like to piggyback off to Mr. Bennett's comment or question. The chart shows, and I'm new here, maybe this has been explained a little bit more, but in 2023 seems to be the spike. Kind of what's led to that, and for education, everything's helping the down.
Pandemic led to that. Yeah, it built up behaviors that began in the pandemic, continued on, and then the isolation.
Everything we're doing, hopefully, the fix of that. By the looks,
I'm trying. We're trying.
It certainly helps. I can remember the years when this started back before the numbers on the chart, and we were over 20 for a couple of those years. So, you know, obviously any death is tragic. The numbers are trending in a more positive.
Yeah, I'm not happy about this year. The 10 really bothers me. Really bothers me.
I don't think back then it was fentanyl related. It was just opioids.
There was
sleep heroin.
It wasn't as much fentanyl. It was mostly the opioid related, but we started seeing fentanyl probably a little bit before, a couple of years before these numbers, but fentanyl definitely made the number spike.
Yeah.
And Narcan wasn't as available,
right,
as it is now. It's everywhere. I mean, you look in Corning, in hotels. Yeah, it was tough. It was tough. That stigma was there and everything else.
We have to keep people alive, and that's what Narcan does. Right. It does. There's no evidence out there that it makes people use more. A lot of people think, well, we're just enabling them. No, there is no evidence of that. Those people don't want to die. Their brain has been hijacked. Mm-hmm. And if we can keep them alive, there's always that possibility they will seek treatment and end up in recovery. I personally work with three people that are in long-term recovery that are three of the most amazing people I've ever met in my life. And they have dedicated their lives to helping other people get where they are. I just got goosebumps. I have to stop. Any more questions?
And we are lucky that we're also, you're able to work with the National Guard.
Yes.
Because that's a big help in our group, is Sergeant Snyder and her team helping us, because that's part of their mission.
Yes.
Any other questions? There's no vote on this, but I want to thank all of you that spoke. And please pass on your compliments to your staff. You guys are doing a great job. Thank you. Matt? Morning.
Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
On behalf of Public Health, we have two new preschool contracts to request for your authorization for. These come from our preschool side. In the preschool side, as children come through that, they become evaluated for specific needs, therapy, whether it's physical therapy. Those are the preschool contracts that I bring to you. I have Stephanie Bretnall, who's an occupational therapist, and the contract is $70 for session, $35 individual in a group session, and those are standard rates, so those are consistent. The second contract is for Choice Physical Therapy, PLLC, again for $70 per session or $35 individual in a group session.
And for newer legislators, preschool special education is one of the only areas, I think we talked about in the budget, that the counties are responsible for anything education related. And occasionally you'll see Matthew come for public health. It is administered through public health. In this case, and certainly we recommend it, a provider is added, and that doesn't automatically mean they're guaranteed so many sessions. It's if a child is referred to that provider. They're authorized. We pay the bill. We get some form of reimbursement, not the full amount, but we are essentially the process mechanism for this. But to be able to refer children in need to a provider, we have to bring them to you to approve them being on the. So that's what this is.
I'll move it.
Second.
I have a motion. I have a second. Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Thank you. Thank you, very much.
Matt. Morning, Kath.
Good morning. So my first item is a contract, which we're not really ready to jump into yet, but just to give you a heads up, what we're looking at is looking to contract with an agency that can help us when we have to sit with a kid because they can't get placed immediately, or they're sitting in the hospital or whatever, because it's very costly to us for our staffing, but it also is very challenging for the staff. So,
and just a little more context, we've talked about it in the past. Kathy and Lise and her staff did a great job interfacing with Corn and Guthrie. We got involved and had some conversations right before Christmas and worked with the hospital. But to make a very long story short, there are many cases. OCFS said that there were 20 kids throughout the state at that moment, right before Christmas, sitting in a hospital waiting for a placement in a facility, a residential facility, essentially. The ER is not an appropriate place. We all agree with that, but that's essentially where a lot of these, especially juveniles, are ending up while they wait to help the hospitals, because once they're in the emergency room, it's the hospital's responsibility to take care of them. We want to partner with them so that they don't have a nurse, an ER nurse, spending all of their time with the child. So if we can, if it's safe, we certainly want to try to help the hospital, and recognizing the burden on them as well. So I agree with Kathy. We have sent caseworkers down and staff down more frequently than I think we all want to try to help out. But if there is a way that we can contract for that, that would be helpful, and it would keep our caseworkers, you know, in the office, in the field, where they need to be.
Mr. Horton?
Are these like foster children or children without parents? What's the situation?
Each case is so different. Most cases it is, if they are in foster care and can be placed, Kathy and her staff certainly find foster beds. A lot of cases that we've seen, and like I said, everyone is different, but it seems like a child that, for whatever reason, the parent can't
or won't
can't take care of
or won't
take care of the child, and the needs are such that they need some other level of placement, not just a foster care placement that we could make very quickly. They need some sort of bed in a facility.
Okay.
And yeah, to Hilda's point, we have had where essentially I think we all, as rational people, would say that they're being abandoned, but the state definition of abandoning a child is no contact for 6 months.
Mr. Eberlin?
Are we looking to partner with hospitals that their employees as a supplement, or this is total individual, our own staff going into these facilities?
So it would be a contract. In this case, what Kathy's talking about right now, it's our staff. We could look at possibly hospitals, but I think what we're looking at is a separate agency. I'm thinking, you know, a Pathways, a ProAction, you know, one of the community-based organizations that can have an appropriate titled staff person, and we contract with them.
There's also residential placements that we'll contract for a year for a bed. We could place there, but they have limitations on some of the placements because of different criteria like IQ, right? So we want to make sure we have a thorough review of our data
and a review of the program so that we are going to be able to fit
right
with that.
Ms. Shannon.
I'm a newbie here, so I'm just curious. Are these are children? Are they, is it a combination of possible abandonment, mental health, a drug addiction? It's like a whole ball of wax. It's that these people are in crisis and you're trying to help place them where they need to be.
Yeah, they can be a result of a child protective investigation. It can be a result of parents' inability to care for the children. Sometimes foster parents are unable to continue to care for children because they regress. It comes from everywhere.
Yeah, and no, I would 100% agree with that. And yeah, it is a challenging situation. We do have adults that we deal with as well. So I just want to make, you know, put that on the table that there are adults at times that are in this position. We don't always send a caseworker to sit with an adult, but again, we want to have and have developed an interactive process in the hospital. Obviously, taking up an ER bed is very expensive for the hospital, especially if the individual doesn't have any further medical needs. So we want to try to work with them, but it could involve, the contract could involve, you know, sitting with an adult as well.
Do we bear the expenses while they're there?
The expense? No, the hospital does.
Really?
Yeah. And that's why, I mean, we've had cases, thankfully we haven't reached the 6 month mark in this county, but talking to a hospital administrator, when she worked at another county, an individual was in the ER for 6 months.
Oh my God.
This was an adult, but we've had multi-weeks, multi-months. And what it comes down to, and the hospitals agree, is, and what we advocate for when we talk to the governor's office, we talk about it, the hospitals talk about it, the closing of facilities back in the 80s and 90s. There are no beds. Mm-hmm. Knock on wood, Kathy and her staff in the hospital did a great job finding a placement for this latest case that we were talking about locally. The backstop for that was a facility in Massachusetts.
Imagine that. Mrs. Fitzpatrick.
Yes. The question would be, are there any other counties that have similar contracts or programs that we can look at?
They do. Yeah. And we're looking at some of those contracts because we're trying to analyze to make sure we get the right contract so that we're not limited.
Right. Then it needs to fit the needs that we have or the
right.
needs that we have experienced up to this point. So these are children that really are not, they're kind of maybe falling through the cracks. You don't have a place for them and we need to develop something.
Yeah.
Yeah. And some of them are in limbo where, you know, this latest case is technically the county didn't have a legal responsibility
right.
or legal custody or anything, but Kathy and her staff do a phenomenal job and recognize the burden on the hospital and have the connections and the resources to be able to help escalate it to try to find that bed. So they did a great job. We had some, and Kathy and I have both have had contentious conversations with hospital administrators because we get it. But at the same time, I think we're with all of the three hospitals in our county. I think we're at a point where they know that we're doing the best that we can, and Kathy and her staff certainly are. And so it's kind of a misery loves company. But if we work together, it's better than yelling at each other and threatening and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Shannon, did you have something?
No, Kelly had.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mrs.
Yeah, yeah.
Patrick. Sorry.
I think Hilda had one. Hilda had a question.
Ms. Hilda.
So I think that with the new administrator at the hospital, things will go better.
I know the administrator well, and she was instrumental in helping out with that case.
Yep, she was very.
The timing was good.
Yes.
Yep.
She was the call once things were getting a little off the rails.
Well, I'm going to say something because this hits home. All of what you've said hits home to me. About 2.5 years ago, Paul Vervaelen, who was president at the time of the hospital, had let me know that he applied for a $5 million grant for an extension off of the emergency room that would house those with mental health needs for a proper placement. And I know that all too familiar because my son, his last year of his life, was a frequent flyer to the hospital. He had full-blown schizophrenia, voices, delusions, we're keeping him up all night. He just wanted to go to the hospital, get a shot, knock him out, get a night's rest, and then he'd be released the Saturday. And this went on and on and on. I thought it was a great idea. I thought that's what the hospital needed. 2-3 months later, Mr. Vivalian, any word on the grant? Nothing. And this went on for about 2 years until he left. So I assumed that the grant was denied. But I really wish the hospital would step up and add some type of room that when someone with mental health needs comes to the hospital, and the police have to transport them. They have to transport them because it's a medical need. If they threaten their life, it's a medical need. They have to get them to the hospital. Where they could do an evaluation, put them in that holding room for a day or two with a caseworker to work with social services, our social services, or community services to get the proper placement for some of these people. But it still continues. We got these frequent flyers, like my son, who go to the hospital for one night, get up and leave, you know, the next day. And then next week, they're there again. There's no follow-up. So that hits home when you talk about something like this. And I was going to ask you, I hope this new person really takes the lead on this and helps out. You can't do it all. And I know you're trying to do it all, Kath, in your department and stuff. You shouldn't have to do it all and provide this and that. When's the hospital? And I don't mean to be critical of the hospital, Guthrie. When are they going to step up and help out too? So it's something needed. We don't have a BSU even in Steuben County. It's crazy. So anyways, I got on my little soapbox there. So anyways, just any other questions? Okay. We have a motion.
No action on that. We're not ready.
No action on. Yet. Okay.
No, I just wanted to give you a heads up. That's what we were looking at. So
thank you.
I did hand out the resolution that I'm requesting to clean up 2025. Did you get one?
Talking you. To me.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
I did not. Wait.
Thank you. I think I missed you. So this is a resolution to clean up our accounts for 2025, again, due to homelessness. And so these are the appropriations we'll be adding to the 2025 expenditures and then the revenues that follow.
Sorry, I took Joe's attention. So we're...
Questions?
Yeah. Second, sorry.
We need a motion.
I'll move it.
Second? We have a second?
Me.
Second? We have a motion. We have a second. Any questions?
Yeah.
Mike?
Pardon me?
How are we doing our home businesses here and the warming?
Steve.
So the warming... Okay, so... We went up 55% in homelessness in 2025, which is what drove our costs. The warming station is functioning pretty well. We are talking about increasing. So they have not been full yet because we wanted to make sure this was going to function without incident. So now they're at like 15, 12 to 15 a night. So now we're going to move some of the people that are in a hotel room into the warming centers. Keep it.
Thanks, keep it. Vanen.
So we're adding $1.7 million in appropriations and $530,000 in revenues. How's it balance?
Doesn't. It's additional cost due to caseload. And so what it would do is essentially reduce. We know that with interest earnings and sales tax that, you know, when the books are closed, we're in the positive. It would just reduce that amount.
Where the money would come.
Sorry.
Did we do anything in 2026?
We increased the budget.
We did increase the
budget. We increased the budget. And I can say, you know, this is... the first time since I've been here that we've had to do a transfer like that because of caseload. So
I've been there. So,
you know, they do a great job budgeting conservatively, not too conservatively, but the caseload number, Kathy said, especially for homelessness, outstripped what we budgeted.
And then we're all covered for this year, should this happen?
For 2026, we increased the budget, but I mean, if we saw another 55% increase, we're going to be short, but okay, knock on wood. I mean, 55 is such a big number that you wouldn't expect that to duplicate again, but.
And I'm thinking the warming center is going to be effective.
That should help a tremendous amount, I would say.
Mr. Bell?
So I do have some questions on the warming center. I've been informed that the warming center is only operational at night.
So the warming center opens at 5 and people go in at 5 or after, and then they have to leave at 9 in the morning.
Yeah, that, and where do they go from there?
So they often, well, we get probably 5 or 6 that come to the office and the rest go do their thing until they... Till 5 o'clock.
Okay, so the article in the Tribune that was also picked up by the Leader, where the police chief from the city of Hornell stated that he's more than happy to bring everybody to Bath. Do they end up back in Hornell, or are they just released on the streets in Bath?
Well, they're given transportation wherever they need to go.
So if they don't request to go back, they stay here.
Pardon me?
If they don't request to go back to Hornell, they stay here.
Well, they could stay here. I mean, everybody has a right to do what they want to do. But what our staff are doing is engaging them and taking them down to the Corning location for the community center and trying to get them engaged in employment.
I would just like to see some maybe a spreadsheet or something on where the people are coming from and where they're ending up. So if, you know, 10 people come over from Hornell, where do they, when they get released, where do they go? Do they go back to Hornell? I'd like to see some of that information. And also with with the facility up there, I'll be perfectly honest. I went up there after the ice storms, and there is nothing done with the parking lot. The facility is not being maintained. And if somebody takes a header in the parking lot, I know we have a hold harmless agreement with him and everything, but we've got the deepest pockets. Where is the protection for us? Why is he not having to keep the building up?
So I did call on that, and I was told it was addressed.
I've got pictures. I sat right in the parking lot. I got out and walked around myself.
Afterwards, he was called and said he was going to take care of it.
But I mean, I don't know why it wasn't taken care of ahead of time.
I don't either. Yeah.
And also, while we're on to that subject, the paperwork that was put in front of this committee before I was on it stated that the individual is a 501c3. I've not been able to find any 990s on him. I'd like to see 3 years of his 990 and a letter of declaration from the IRS that he is a 501c3, which is by federal law required of a 501c3 nonprofit.
We can ask.
I mean, this is the person we're doing. We're writing him a lot of checks. We need to know.
Any other questions? All right, we need a motion.
We have a motion.
Oh, we got a motion. We have a second.
We haven't voted.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried. Thank you, Kath.
Thank you.
Morning, Nate.
Good morning. Some tuition aid this morning, both in public health. The first is for Jennifer Keenan in pursuit of a bachelor's in nursing. And on the agenda, it stated 3 credit hours. At the time of agenda, we didn't have verification on 2 other courses that she'll be taking throughout this year. So I'd like to amend that to 9 credit hours. It's 3 courses at $592.50 each, which for a total under the 50% is $1,777.50.
Questions?
I'll make motion.
I have a motion.
I'll
have a second.
Me.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
And the next one is Michaela Decker, an associate's in nursing, one course, 3 credit hours. Total is 1,554. At 50%, the county cost would be $777.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion. We have a second. Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Carried.
Thank you much.
Thank you, Nate. We have an extra. Bill? Are you done, Nate? Yeah.
I'm done.
In addition.
Yes, in addition. Sorry for about this, but thank you very much. So for the newer legislators, I'm Bill Caudill. I'm the director of the County Youth Bureau. And we have been running a program for 40 years called Youth in Government, where we have students who come over the course of the semester and learn about county government, meet with the departments, observe the legislature, observe a committee. They're working on resolutions and are holding their simulated session next Thursday. You're invited to that. So that's the reason I'm here. Kelly's going to be chairing that that meeting. They're going to be sitting in your chairs and doing your thing. So one of our legislators, our very first youth in government presenter or student back in 1983, I believe it was.
83.
So it is, it's an amazing program. And I invite you all again, 10 o'clock next Thursday, right here. Thank you.
Look forward to it, Bill. I'll tell you, I've attended one and it was very worthwhile. I thought the kids did a great job at the last one and some of the things that come out is just very good. So
they usually have a little different perspective and some different ideas and things that kind of trigger for them. We do have 11 students, so I think it'll take about an hour, maybe 75 minutes or so. Next semester, we're on tap, I think, right now for 24 students. So,
well done. Big Thank group. You.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Nope, nothing for me.
Amanda, nothing.
Nope. Motion to adjourn.
Motion to close.
I'll second it.
Motion second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.